I avoid reunions. I'm not a rebel, a recluse, or a sociopath, and I'm too young to qualify as a crank. Even if it's true that I just spent the evening of my 25th birthday not carousing with friends or drinking champagne at a candlelit table for two, but resolutely alone and working, glazing a large ovoid porcelain bowl while listening to Ella Fitzgerald sing songs by the Gershwin brothers. A crank could never love Gershwin. My one real boyfriend in college, just before we broke up, told me I'm nostalgic to a fault. He professed contempt for what he called the delusional soundtrack to our parents' deluded lives. He informed me that you can't be nostalgic for things that had their heyday before you were so much as born. Just about any member of my family would have laughed him out the door and down the garden path. Family reunions are the worst. All that competition disguised as fellowship. And they're also the hardest to avoid. But when my father's great-aunt Lucy died last summer, there was an inheritance at stake, a collection of antique jewelry. Not the glossy, priceless stuff. No diamonds, tiaras, or Niagaras of pearls. Not things you'd sell, but things so deliciously old-fashioned and stylish that to wear them makes you feel like a character from a Jane Austen novel or a Chekhov play. The one piece I remembered most vividly was a cameo, 2 inches square, ivory on steel-blue Pacific coral, a woman's face inclined toward her hand, in her slender fingers an iris. Aunt Lucy had worn that cameo day and night, winter and summer, on lace and wool. Maybe she'd left us a charm bracelet, maybe earrings of garnet or Mexican silver, but mostly I wondered about that cameo and wanted it. I'd wanted it since I was a little girl. One of my earliest memories is of sitting on Lucy's lap, squirming to find a comfortable spot on her bony thighs, yet happy to feel her kind, honeyed voice in my hair as she talked with the other grown-ups gathered on her porch. She did not object to my poking and fingering the cameo, probing its fragile details. The woman's eyelids and earlobes, the cuticles of her nails, the harmoniously wandering tendrils of her hair. She let me borrow it once, for a family dinner at a country inn. Because Lucy never had children, not even a husband, my father long ago became the one who kept an eye on her in the last decades of her very long life. Geographically, he was the closest family member by far. Out of a large, tenaciously Confederate clan, they were the only two living anywhere you can count on snow. Once Dad decided to stay north, after earning 2 degrees at Harvard, the family lumped him together with Lucy. "How are the defectors faring up yonder?" a cousin might ask Dad at a wedding in Memphis or Charleston. Happily, their proximity blossomed into genuine affection. So Dad was the executor of Lucy's will, which emerged from her bureau drawer along with a letter to my father that she'd written a year before she died. It began, "To my splendid grand-nephew Beauchance. Before I take my irreversible leave, which I suppose I will now have taken, strange to think, I am seizing this lucid moment to write down a few matters pertaining to the house and my rag-bag possessions therein. I have little doubt that I shall have left the house in a rather sorry state, for which I apologize. Be charitable, if you can, to any bats or raccoons which may have colonized the attic or basement, though none to my knowledge have done so, and please take Sonny's word on any tasks for which he claims I still owe him payment. Our mutual accounting has grown slack, if not capricious." Over the phone, Dad read me the letter in its crisp yet meandering entirety, stopping now and then to chuckle. I heard no tears in his voice until the end, where she wrote, "Whatever modest adornments pass for jewelry, I leave to your daughters, Louisa and Clement." I did not become as intimately acquainted with them as I would have liked, but I did know the satisfaction, one summer to the next, of seeing how they grew, as I wish I had seen you evolve in your youth. I wish I had known much sooner, Beau, that you would become the facsimile of a perfect son, a gift whose pleasures I wish I had been blessed to know firsthand." His voice cracked on the word gift. As if he didn't deserve such gratitude, my father, who will do just about anything for anyone, driving my mother crazy with all the favors he does for everyone else, including, as she likes to say, any random citizen of outer Slobovia and its most godforsaken suburbs. I decided to fly across the entire country because I couldn't bear the thought that if I didn't show up in person, my sister might inherit everything, including that cameo, by default. On the plane, I tried to decide which of two equally vulgar motives, materialism or spite, had compelled me to buy a ticket I couldn't afford to a place where I'd see no one I wanted to see.